Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental, Dan Loss. Zach Bryson, we are back. Zach, I took a week off from the podcast. I went down to sunny Orlando, Florida for the ANA Masters of Advertising Law Conference and asked me what the highlight of my trip was, Zach.
Dan, what was the highlight of your trip?
Okay, sneak attack. I didn't post this on LinkedIn because, you know, gotta leave some stuff just for the podcast. But brought my wife, brought my daughter, because it is Orlando, Florida. I left controversially. We left the two-year-old at home. We took the four-year-old and snuck out of the conference on day two. I was there for basically 24 out of 26 hours. And I spent Thursday evening at Disney with my kids. So that was the highlight of the weekend. Yes, we had some good networking, good legal related things, good networking, good stuff. But family time is always number one, Zach. How about them apples?
I mean, that is pretty great. I mean, it's great to be able to go to the conference one, but then I think it's definitely even better to be able to kind of sneak away and go do something that arguably is a little bit more fun, especially for the
arguably more fun. It's the nicest. What is it? What do they say? The greatest place on earth, Disney? What's the catchphrase?
I think it is the greatest place on earth, or most magical place on earth, or something like that. But I think your family probably enjoyed that a lot more than they would have the conference.
I agree. So here's we'll do this part quick, and then we have some big topics today. It's funny, you know, sometimes you and I will come on and they're interesting topics, but there's really one or two that I really want to hit today. There was much more that I wanted to hit, but we're going to hit today, and we'll talk a little bit about the conference in a minute, but we're going to hit Joe Burrow and what is an NFL investigation into, which will likely result in some type of monetary fine. We'll see if it gets bigger than that, but there's a real gambling question asked around that. We're going to talk about the latest in the Michigan saga. We are, as we predicted, at the tip of the iceberg. This is not going away anytime soon. I have some comments about the surprising settlement, we'll put it that way, between Michigan and the Big Ten Conference. Talk about the Knicks and Raptors, an update in that trade secrets lawsuit. And Zach, the topic that brought you to my attention not so long ago, Formula One. We got a lawsuit coming out of the Las Vegas event. Before we get into the good stuff, podcast sponsored by Themis Bar Review, the top bar prep company in the entire galaxy. You know what's funny? I get so many texts from people. What's that promo code, Dan? What's that promo code? So here, if you can find me on DMs, on Twitter, LinkedIn, anywhere, and you say, Dan, what's that promo code? I will get you that promo code. I'm not just going to give it on the podcast. I want you to be encouraged to reach out, and I'll give you that promo code. I want to know who our listeners are, who the thousands and thousands of people that tune into our podcast each and every week. Zach, on that note, went down to Orlando. I did something. It's a veteran networking move. Zach, I'll teach you this one. You know, when you get your JD, your practicing lawyer, I'll teach you this move. If you go to the conference, great. You know, I don't know who's going to be there. You don't know. The trick is maybe there are going to be people that are in that area that might not be at the conference. Right? That's an advertising law conference. Not everyone is at a firm that's doing sweepstakes laws and advertising law, marketing law. It's very technical stuff, privacy policies. We'll talk about that offline. But I put out the SOS and I said, if you're at the conference, or here's the sneaky part. If you're at the conference, I'd love to network. Or if you happen to be in the Orlando, Florida area, love to meet up. I'm going to shout out four people here. I'm only going to do four. Jade Gummer is my guy. He is an Orlando-based lawyer. Jade made it out to a bar night we did afterward. Ksenia Myrova, I think I'm pronouncing that last name correct. Ksenia is one of the top sports immigration attorneys in the country. My guy, Nate Otto, showed up. He one of our diehards of the podcast, has been listening for like 3-4 years. He's a law student at U of F Law. And Ben Schrader, one of our OGs, the Conduct Detrimental Network, was actually at the conference. So I could shout out other people, but those are the four that went to the networking, a little bar night that we arranged at the bar. So shout out. We got a nice conduct network that extends to every state in the continental United States, even University of Hawaii. Yeah, got some friends down there. So, Zach, this is just the PSA. If you're listening to this and you're in your car and you're like, oh, I love the Sports Law podcast, I bet no one else listens to it. Not true. We got a big network around the country, Zach, yourself included. Where are you recording this from? North Carolina?
I'm recording it from North Carolina, and you were just talking about Themis. I've got my 21 pounds of books for bar review to start that in a month or so. So that's going to be fun.
We have talked about doing a conduct detrimental conference of some way, shape, or form, or sports law conference. Those that were in attendance, what stays in Orlando, Florida at the ANA Masters of Advertising Law Conference, what happens there stays there. But we're in the works. We're talking about some conferences. We'll figure it out. Okay. Yeah, back from Orlando. Good stuff. For those that are listening to this, might be Thanksgiving today. Happy Thanksgiving. I have a bone. I guess we'll do this at the end. By the way, my sports betting picks and the show for Better Edge are our sponsor, the social betting platform. We'll give our picks at the end. I'm red hot. I'm 5-1. And last week I wasn't on this podcast. If you're listening to this, they're like, well, you go, where was Dan? Why wasn't he here? I was at the conference, right? So, you know, I want to pass this podcast down to the next generation of lawyers at some point. When I die, I'll put this in my will. This is a giant game of succession to see who's going to take the reins after Dan and I pass away. But that said, I heard a lot of slander from one Mike Kravchenko, who's not on this podcast this week. He goes and he texted me, did the right thing. And he said, Dan, I want your betting pick for the week. If you're not going to be here, I want to make sure you get your betting pick. I want your record to go on. So I texted him. I did my research. And I said, Cleveland Browns, -1.5 against the Steelers. So that's all I said. I didn't give him any context. I had context. We don't need to say it here because it was a winning pick. And Zach, when I wasn't here, Evan Mattel, Mike Lawson, they were both witnesses to the slander that occurred. He said, Dan's picking the Browns, but they're going to lose. And that was a terrible pick by Dan. Slander, and more slander. So, Mike, I'm watching you. I know where you live. I know where you go to school. I know where you are 1L school. I will find you. And Jason Statham style, Jason Statham style, I will find you. And if you know what I'm talking about, I'm going to do something to you when I find you. That's your threat, Mike. Okay? This is a winning pick. How many winning picks have you given out here, Mike? One. Giving out five. So listen. Same. If you come for the king, you better not miss. Better not miss Mike Kravchenko, my guy Mike. Okay. I'll shut up. Zach, do you listen to the podcast? Do you listen to the podcast when you're not on it? That's the real question.
I do. Maybe not every single episode, but I try to catch as many as I can, even if I'm putting it on double speed and listening to it as I'm walking to class or back from class. But I do try to listen to it. And I was a listener to all of that slander. So it was funny then, and it's funny now because you bring it up again.
Lander. I listened to it. I texted him and I said, if I'm winning, if I win this bet, I'm going to come after you. Okay. Anyway, topics today. We mentioned them. We'll do these. We'll try to keep this clearly tight. And you are Joe Burrow, Michigan, Knicks versus Raptors, and Formula One. Let us start in the world of the NFL. Joe Burrow is involved in a controversy that I'm not aware of that quite has happened as like this in NFL circles. So there are rules in the NFL that you have to make honest disclosure with respect to your injury report. Now, you know, there's conversation in the NBA about load management, about faking guys' injuries and keeping them off the court. The general rule of thumb in the NFL is if you are aware of a player with an injury, you have to fairly report that. The Patriots have gotten in trouble for this over the years. And I'm sure the Patriots have been fine. I just couldn't find it as we were prepping for this. But I know there was the last 5 years, a suspension that I think it was the Steelers. What was the number? Was it 2019?
2019, it was the Steelers. They were
the number, like
75,000.
Yeah.
And then so, Mike Tomlin was 25,000. So 100 grand total.
So there's a history. If you don't disclose an injury with respect to your quarterback, a player that has very big ramifications for the game, there will be ramifications. Now, it happened with the Steelers. I recall it happening with the Patriots in the past. I'm sure there were some fines or no loss of draft picks, but some issues. Now, Zach, I have a question. Let's say you are aware of a wrist injury to one Joseph Xavier Burrow, not his middle name, but let's pretend for the story. You're aware that he has a right wrist injury on his throwing hand. You are the team. And, you know, the coaches are aware, everyone's kind of aware in the organization, the guy's walking around with the wrist brace. And social media posts a picture of the team getting off the bus. And there's Joey B, ice cold Joey B, with a right wrist brace. And let's say, Zach, you are the coach of the team and you know that this is not public information. You see social media posts it. Zach Taylor, I believe, is the coach of the Bengals. What are you telling social media if you see this picture of your quarterback and a right wrist brace posted online?
If I see this picture of my quarterback with a brace on social media and I've done what I'm supposed to, it doesn't matter. But in this situation, and I know that there's an injury, but the public doesn't, and I haven't disclosed it on the injury report like I'm supposed to, then I'm immediately going to tell that social media person, hey, go take that down right now.
I think you have nailed what has happened here. So Burrow's got his plan. And people have seen this now. So let's we've talked about spoliation in the podcast, but I don't know who made the directive. Bengals social media posted this picture with a right wrist brace on. the photo is deleted off of social media. It no longer exists. And what happens? The game goes on, right? This picture was deleted. Nobody thought anything of it. I'm sure some certain gamblers might have caught it. My understanding is that there was a late line move towards the Ravens. I think the number was like -4.5, but it went from like -3.5 to -4.5 right before kickoff, which is an odd line movement. Public information was out there. It was tweeted. Burrow gets, he gets tackled by Jadeveon Clowney. Lands on his right wrist, the one that was on the brace. Okay. So I'm going to give you a quote, right? This is a quote from Zach Taylor from a press conference Friday afternoon. So this was Thursday Night Football. Joe had an acute injury yesterday. He tore a ligament in his right wrist. And there's comments separately from Joe Burrow saying it is a new injury. So this is a season-ending right wrist injury. Now, Zach, I think it's somewhat suspicious. Right wrist injury before the game. And they're claiming this was a new injury that occurred during the game. Zachary Xavier Bryson, are you buying it?
I'm not really buying it. If you're seen a couple of days earlier wearing what appears to be a brace, and then that's taken down, you know something's up. You're not going to have Joe Burrow out there wearing a brace on his own, and one of the trainers on the team isn't going to be like, "Hey, Joe, you're our quarterback. Why are you wearing that brace on your throwing arm?" So there, I don't think there's any way that he just found out about it or it was a new injury that didn't exist at all before.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion. And like, listen, you guys know I have this insurance defense background, so we can just talk about what happened. I mean, it's not a court of law here, but there is something to read. And this is the unique part. Obviously, there's been injuries or issues reporting injuries. And I was talking to a colleague today and said, well, what about, you know, the Chiefs, that they said that Travis Kelce's injury was worse than it was. I guess this was last year during the playoff run. And I remember a betting event. I had bet on the Milwaukee Bucks a couple years ago to win the title. And like Giannis looked like he broke his back and then he was playing the next game. So there is some gamesmanship with underreporting injuries. But in this day and age, if you are aware of a quarterback injury and he has an injury, he's wearing a brace, right? Like, and you don't disclose that. And then the optics are that this was the same injury, right? So this concept of spoliation, obviously, if you delete evidence there during the course of a real case, it's not a real case. But, you know, there's a concept that lawyers have crafted that if you delete evidence and, you know, you have the intention of deleting it for no one to see it again, there is a adverse inference that can be drawn from, you know, here it's not really a jury, but we could be the social media jury, the sports betting public. And we could say, hey, you deleted that because you didn't want people to know about it. And Zach, to your point, you deleted it because you hadn't disclosed it yet. So I think the Bengals look really bad. If the Zach, what was the number for the Steelers? 75,000 was the suspend, was the fine?
Yeah, it was 75,000 for the Steelers, 25,000 for the coach, 100,000 total. I think it's higher here.
Higher here, not just because of inflation, but because Joe Burrow and the Bengals are, you know, at least we're on a path to be one of like six Super Bowl contending teams, you know, and Bengals are one of the top teams in the AFC at least. So yeah, I think the Bengals are in trouble. I think, you know, someone was asking me their loss of draft picks and whatnot. I'm like, I have no idea what the NFL wants to do, but we'll see how egregious it is. But I was getting to this before. My insurance defense background, if you're really conducting a real investigation and the NFL has announced a true investigation into this injury and whether the Bengals should be, you know, have some type of discipline, you could have a medical expert look at this torn wrist and see if it was a re-aggravation of a prior injury. You could see that, right? You'd ask the Bengals for prior studies. Have you done any prior MRIs on Joe Burrow before the game? You know, if he's wearing a brace, you would think he's got some type of medical attention before that. If you're really doing a real investigation, you'll figure out whether and to what extent the Bengals knew this thing was injured before. And if Joey Burr was wearing a brace before Thursday Night Football in a short week, sensing there's some discipline coming for the Bengals. I don't see a way around it, but Zach, are you with me? You're with me on all fours here. I feel like we're on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, without trying to be contrarian and saying, oh no, I don't think they're going to be punished. I mean, it seems like there's very clear policies that the NFL has for if someone is injured, even if they're a full participant in practice and they've got something that's sore, something that's sprained, or something's bothering them a little bit, and it's adhered to a lot of the time, and then to not do it, and then unfortunately, in the game immediately following, having Joe get hurt with exactly the arm that was in the brace whenever he got off the plane on Wednesday in the social media video, I don't really think there's a way to spin this that they didn't know it and that he should have been on that list. So I think it's going to be, I kind of have to be on the same side as you here.
Okay, now hypothetically, Zach, you thought this topic was over. You thought I was about to transition. Nah, no. Let us say that Zach, we're gonna call you for purpose of this story, Zachary P. Bryson. The P is gonna stand for Portnoy. Let's just pretend that's your middle name, Zachary Portnoy Bryson. And in this hypothetical, you are very wealthy. You own a social media. I don't know what they want to call them. We'll call them like Snotstool Sports, right? Like, we'll have some fun with that. You are the CEO of the company, you're the founder of the company. You place a $120,000 bet on the Bengals, okay, in that game. And we're talking about exactly what happened, or exactly what we think happened. The Bengals didn't disclose an injury, and you lose that $120,000 bet. Zach, you don't know the answer to this question. I think there is one. Do you think you have the ability? Well, actually, we'll take one step back. You as Zachary P. Bryson. Isn't that your real initial P? Did I nail that?
No, Dan, you definitely know my middle initial because you love to quote my middle name, which is
K.
Steelman.
Oh, Steelman, Zachary S. Bryson. Man of Steelman. I do like that. Okay, so enough with the hypotheticals. Dave Portnoy, Barstool Sports founder, not Snotstool Sports founder. He says he's I don't know if he's doing it for content or if he means it, but he's saying like the law firm of Portnoy and Portnoy, I think his dad is a lawyer. We're announcing a class action lawsuit to go after the NFL. So in this hypothetical, Zachary P. Bryson, we might have to change your middle initial to P. It actually sounds pretty good, Zachary P. Bryson. Do you think you have a case here, or are you just drumming this up for attention to your website?
I don't think you have a real case here. I mean, you are betting on sports, and with betting or gambling, there's sort of an assumption of the risk that you're maybe not going to win, maybe going to win. I mean, it's definitely frustrating and upsetting, but in absent specific evidence that they did this for the purpose of influencing the betting lines, I really don't think that there's much of a leg to stand on, and you kind of assumed the risk that you might lose the money because you were betting on sports, which always has the inherent risk you're going to lose your money.
Did I teach you about assumption of the risk, or did you learn that in law school? What happened first?
Ooh,
I might have taught you at first, Zach.
you might have in one of the early might have in one of the early podcasts.
Your hesitation tells me I actually might have. So I love hearing that. So in 20, this is your history or your legal precedent that you need to know here. And this is for you and for anyone else that's wondering, oh, maybe I should join Portnoy in this lawsuit. Yeah, if you want to, like, I don't know, waste your time, sure. So the Astros had their big sign stealing scandal in 2017. So there was a bunch of bettors that filed a lawsuit against DraftKings for, this role in the alleged sign stealing. And the question was like whether Major League Baseball, the Astros, and the Red Sox could be held liable for fraud relating to, bets placed. The Red Sox were accused of sign stealing. The Yankees were. It's a big case, involved a lot of baseball teams. Doesn't really matter for our purposes, but that's what it was related. It was relating to fraud, relating to an unfair competitive advantage. So, shocker. I mean, like that's what Portnoy's saying. Portnoy's saying he wants to, as a bettor, sue the NFL and the Bengals and whoever else that knew about this and didn't disclose it. For relating to those bets. That Astros case was thrown out of court because there's no standing for a bettor to sue. You're not, and this is exactly how you phrase it, Zach. There is no, you know that you're not getting complete inside information. You know that there are injuries and other things that go on in the locker room that you're not aware of. Maybe someone's got a sore foot, or someone broke up with their girlfriend the night before. You are aware that there's some level of information that you don't have, and you buying a ticket to a game or you being a gambler on a game doesn't guarantee you all the information around a particular avenue. The only thing that you really have with these cases have shown, like if you're a season ticket holder, you might have the right to watch a sporting event. That's what a season ticket or a ticket in general guarantees you. It doesn't guarantee you the right to a game without cheating. That's what was learned in the Jets sign stealing saga with the Patriots once upon a time. A similar lawsuit by a Jets season ticket fan who wanted the fair right of his season tickets if the Jets didn't lose all those games to the Patriots. He wanted that back. And the judge is like, listen, buddy. You have a right to watch the games. You don't have a right to have the Jets win the games and be like averse to cheating. You don't get that, buddy, bucko. So that's our case. Bettors have no standing here. I'm sorry, Davey Betts. That's just the law of the land, my friend. I feel like Porto's just got to hear it. His dad is not a sports lawyer. His dad is like some random personal injury lawyer. He's got to hear it from the sports lawyers. Portnoy, there's no action here. There's no case. Sorry, buddy. I'd love for there to be a case here. There's no dice. No dice, Zach.
No dice, no dice. And the quote that you said earlier, a second ago, tickets give you the right to watch, is going to be important later on. So just wanted to point that out as something that I'll be
Let's do
touching
it
back on
here.
whenever we get to
Let's do it.
that F1 thing.
No, let's do it here. I said it for a reason. You're the F1 guy. Tell everybody what happened this weekend with the Las Vegas Grand Prix.
Yeah, so this past weekend was the first ever, well, not first ever, but first iteration of the Las Vegas Grand Prix, which is supposed to be around for a while. And there was an issue with the practice sessions and the ticket holders, which is why I brought up that quote that you just said, where in the first practice session, they do three practice sessions so the drivers can get used to the track, and then they do qualifying and then the race. So 9 minutes into the first practice session, one of the cars went over a drain cover because it's a street circuit. It's on the
Wait, let me
streets of
say it.
Las
Let me say
Vegas.
it. Let me say it. Carlos Sainz.
Carlos Sainz, yes, a Ferrari. He ran over a drain cover that was supposed to be secured, and it wasn't secured enough and flew up, damaged his car, and now there's a gigantic hole in the middle of the track. So obviously they can't continue until that's fixed. So they suspended the rest of that session. And then the second practice session, whenever it did happen, they did not allow fans back in the stands to watch it, which obviously made people upset because they paid to get a ticket to allow them to watch, and then they weren't allowed to watch. So there has been a class action lawsuit that's been brought in relation to that, because all Formula One did, quote unquote, all they did was offer these ticket holders for the session on Friday night a $200 F1 store voucher saying, "Oh, sorry, we didn't let you back in, even though you paid for this. We're not going to give you your money back, but here, go spend money on F1 merch."
So this is why we bring it up. This is why we talk about these topics. So this is, a ticket does, in some sense, allow you to watch a game. But as you pointed out, and I was, I had a lot of money on Charles Leclerc. How do we say his name? How do we say the other Ferrari guy's name?
Charles
No, it's not
Leclerc.
Charles. It's like Charles Leclerc. I had money on the Leclerc podium. So, when I saw a Ferrari explode, I got very concerned for my wagers and obviously for their safety and health. But yeah, I was watching the, I was watching portions of it. I stayed up pretty late. I think it was Saturday night, tried to get a piece of it, and I ended up conking out around like, I don't know, two. It was a late race. It was like a 1:30 start on East Coast. But yeah, we should talk about this here. Let's say let's say you're Formula One, right? So, okay, if it's a normal ticket and someone buys a ticket to an event and the event gets canceled, they have a right to watch that event. But what if you have random explosions that are occurring in a track that you've never seen before? Maybe, Zach, that is a legitimate health and safety concern.
Yeah, there's definitely valid concern if it happened on one of the drain covers. Well, it's a street circuit, so there's lots of drain covers. So what if it happens again? And then there's the delay that required to fix it. There definitely are.
I heard it took them like 5 hours to fix it. That was my understanding. And it had to replace every manhole cover on the entire circuit.
Yeah, it took them a very long time because you have to go through and make sure every single one is properly secured, as well as fix the one that broke. And there definitely were concerns and are concerns about safety there. And I think a good analogy is like, yes, you have the right to watch, but what happens if it rains during a race? It's outside, and let's say they call the race early because it's too dangerous, too wet. And they don't want everyone to slide around and crash. Like, at a certain point, there's kind of assuming the risk when you're buying the ticket again. Because of the nature of the sporting event, that something might happen where it's unsafe to continue. And how much right do you really have to complain, especially when they're trying to do something on the back end to make you whole, saying, "Hey, yeah, that sucks. We're sorry, but here's something," instead of nothing.
So let's talk about the something instead of nothing. This is important here. There's a lawsuit that's filed. Shout out to AJ Perez at Front Office Sports, who always gets these complaints. He always puts them up on the site for Front Office Sports. So AJ is one of our OGs. We love AJ. Lawsuit's filed by a firm called Demopoulos Injury Law. And I guess co-counsel someone named Jared Kahn Legal and Consulting. So shout out to those guys for being the first to the courthouse steps. this is not an injury lawsuit, right? I guess maybe in some sense it's like a financial lawsuit, but it's usually the first to sue. So when at my old firm, this my name's on this case, so it's public. I was part of the Fyre Festival cases once upon a time, which were a class action lawsuit. So the firm I was at, they did it before I got there, was one of the first firms to file a class action lawsuit relating to the Fyre Festival cases. So that firm I was at got a ton of good exposure by being the first there. And it was a real case, right? Look what happened in Fyre Festival. Like, there's obviously fraud. There's obviously a lot of issues. Similar, right? You bought a ticket to an event and that event didn't happen. Now, like, that whole event was based on fraud. So that was, you know, kind of an open and shut case, right? This one's a little bit trickier. I don't know. These are manhole covers. They're not like grenades that just like explode randomly. This was a manhole cover. My understanding and doing some research in this, and, you know, I'd like to say I'm at least a casual F1 fan, if not a little bit deeper than that, but that the like downward force of the car going over this manhole cover, it wasn't properly secured. So the manhole cover kind of got like suctioned up into the bottom of Carlos Sainz's car and it exploded the floor. So my understanding of the damage, and I'm trying to coy and they're not trying to show all these pictures, but there was a giant hole in the bottom of his car. He could have lost a foot. He could have lost a leg. I mean, it was a legit explosion that occurred between his legs. Like, and if you follow F1, like, you're basically laying down flat in the cars. You're like kind of in a seated position, but more kind of reclined. This could have been like catastrophic. So I don't know why all the fans needed to be removed from the stands, but let's talk about numbers. According to this lawsuit filed in Clark County, Nevada District Court, which, if memory serves, I think is the same court that John Gruden's case was filed in, his separate Raiders case. But, and that also might have been the case where the forum where Henry Ruggs had his criminal case, the former Raiders wide receiver. But story for another time. 35,000 tickets were sold to this particular event. And my understanding is that fans had to be, quote, this is my memory, I'm paraphrasing, but forcibly removed from the stands. They did not want to leave, right? They just wanted to stay there and enjoy it because they spent a lot of money on these tickets. So, Zach, did you say the number? Did you say what they were offered?
Yeah, they were offered. It was just to offer to people who had only bought tickets for that one night. So there's different ticket options you could buy for one night or for the entire 3-day weekend of everything. But the people that just bought tickets for that night and didn't get to see the second session, they were offered a $200 voucher for the F1 shop. So buying merch for Formula One.
Voucher to go to F1. I missed that. I thought it was just $200. A voucher to the F1 shop. Okay, now let's do the math. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Allegedly,
for it.
Allegedly, this is according to the complaint. So we got to say allegedly because we don't have the answer. We don't have anything else. 35,000 invitees purchased tickets from F1 to appear and attend the quote practice run close quote event. Zach, so let's do some basic math. What's 35,000 times 200?
Ooh, testing my skills tonight.
You gotta add some zeros together. Well, let's do it this
way. It's like $700,000, right?
And give me one more zero.
$7 million?
$7 million. 35,000 at 200 is $7 million. So what is F1 offering? If they were offering $200 per attendee, you know, they're just giving out $200 per, that's $7 million that F1 has collected. And these are just like seat licenses. I don't know. They can charge whatever they want for these tickets. That would be $7 million out of their pocket. But if they're saying, hey, here's $7 million in monopoly money and you could spend it at our store. They're not really offering anything. They're offering like spend this at our store. It's kind of a slap in the face offer. You can give a refund, right? Give them back their tickets. But refunds are a little tricky because people are getting stuff from third party vendors and from StubHub, from this one, from that one. So it's a little dicey. I think that settlement offer is kind of slap in the face, but I'm not convinced. We have to figure out what F1 knew when they like evacuated the stands. That's my understanding of what occurred. But like, did they think just a random explosion occurred? Maybe they thought it was a terrorist attack. I have no idea what they thought it was. But as of now, as we record this on Tuesday, we know that it was just a freak accident from like the downward force of the car pulling this up. But maybe there's, well, I have no idea what F1 is going to say. Maybe they thought it was a terrorist attack, like a bomb went off. Like that's, if you watch the video, it looks like it kind of looks like that's what happened. If you watch the damage to the car, that's what it looks like. And, you know, if you're doing risk management, clear everyone out. Let's figure this out. And then maybe like an hour in, they figured out like, hey, it was just kind of like the car freak injury. You know, do you buy that, Zach? If I made that argument in court, are you kind of like, you kind of buying that?
I definitely think there was safety issues, but not necessarily that they didn't know what happened. I mean, it was pretty clear early on that he goes over the drain cover. There's a big, it comes up, it hits his car. It hits someone else's car too. It wasn't just his car. There was another car that hit it after it had been sucked up into the bottom of his car. And then there's a big hole in the track where there was a manhole cover. So I'm sure pretty quickly they were like, well, crap, we didn't secure the drain covers well enough. But I think the public safety part is, well, if that happened again, Dan, and another drain cover came up and another car hit it and the car is going 200 miles an hour, one, that's incredibly dangerous for the guy driving that car, either the one that gets sucked up underneath, like you said, that could have taken out a foot or an arm or a leg or really hurt Carlos. But if another car hits it and then sends it into the stands, that's a bigger issue. And then the personal injury lawyer would have some personal injury cases to be bringing against F1.
I watched the videos, and we can wrap on this. I mean, you know, I've turned into an F1 guy from via Drive to Survive and whatnot. They had to go through the track, and I'm not sure they didn't catch it before, but they had to go through the track and replace each and every manhole cover. So, you know, maybe they were trying to figure out if they're going to replace them all, whatnot. Like, let's just get the fans off. This is a hazard. It's a risk. God forbid someone gets hurt. You know, someone gets really hurt. I don't know, $7 million in like monopoly money. You know what the conversion rate is to like a real personal injury lawsuit. But if there was a real health and safety risk, and like, to be fair, like in good faith, like why would F1 want to remove all of the fans? Like, what business? Like, there's concessions. There's 100 ways they can make money off of you while you're there. They must have had a real reason. And at this stage, you know, I generally go for the smaller guy in the David and Goliath battles. I'm siding with F1 here. I think they had probably a good reason to do this. They don't just like remove the fans. They must have had some real monetary reason when they weighed the risk management, the risks of having fans there versus the reward of like, they might buy some more hot dogs. Like, I don't know. Let's just get them out of here. Let's be safe. We've never had this event at this track before. It's an open track. Like, we don't know what's going on. Maybe it's terrorist tech. I have no idea what they thought, but I'm willing to, you know, obviously the burden's on the plaintiff in these cases, but I, you know, I'm sensing that the F1's got some defenses here. So looking forward to what they respond in their answer. I imagine they're going to sue. There's going to be a motion to dismiss here. I feel pretty confident about that, but yeah, I don't know. I like F1's chances here at the early stage in the conduct detrimental resorts world and casino. I'm going to put F1 at -175 to win the case. That is a legitimate favorite. That's like I think the implied odds are like, let's see if I botched this. It's like 66%, 70%, maybe a little bit more. I think this is a loser of a case. But listen, I'm all for sports law cases. It keeps our show in business, Zach. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I would even put money if we're betting at the conduct detrimental hotel
resort. No, it's not a hotel. It's Resorts World and Casino.
My apologies. The conduct detrimental Resorts World and Casino, end quote, that I'm going to put money on a motion to dismiss coming too. And that motion's probably going to be granted. I don't think this lawsuit really goes anywhere. I understand that they're frustrated, but it seems like there were real health and safety concerns that kind of had them do this.
I'm in agreement. Zach, you're going to have to disagree with me on one of these next two topics. You're going to have to pick your poison here. Okay.
It's crazy. We're agreeing on both of them so far.
Nope. You're going to contractually obligated to disagree with me. Okay, let's do this one quick. We've covered Michigan a lot. I just want to, unless you're living under a rock, there's a really big update in this case. People, you know, were tagging me on Twitter saying I was wrong about this. I was not wrong about this. I said that I predicted that Michigan would win the temporary restraining order hearing and that Coach Harbaugh would be on the sidelines for, I think they played Maryland this weekend, and they play Ohio State. I said he's going to be on the sidelines. He's going to win the temporary restraining order hearing. And, you know, I think Harbaugh's going to be on the sidelines. I don't know. I think I told you I like Michigan being the heel, but for all intents and purposes, I did think that Michigan was going to win that temporary restraining order hearing in front of Michigan-based judge. Shocker. Home court advantage. Not some such technical analysis, but I did feel pretty strongly in those convictions. And then what do we have, Zach? What do we have? I go away to sunny Orlando, Florida. I'm like looking forward. I've done my prep on this TRO hearing that's going to occur in Michigan. The hearing's supposed to be on Friday. Harbaugh was supposed to testify at the hearing. It was going to be some good theater. I was a one credit shy of a theater minor back in college, but story for another day. This case, all of a sudden, very quickly, despite the 10-page letter campaigns coming from everywhere, coming from the Big Ten, from Michigan, from Harbaugh, from everywhere, this case very quietly settles and goes away. So Michigan makes all these noise. They file this temporary restraining order, try to get it done on Saturday, right? They have this thing on Monday, the hearing scheduled for Friday. And this case quietly, quietly fades into the background. And Harbaugh says, I'm accepting the punishment. I have my thoughts, Zach. Now, you are an alum of the illustrious, prestigious Wake Forest University. Okay. Let's pretend you were an alum of Michigan. You Michigan Wolverine, go blue, all that stuff. Why did your alma mater, why did your head football coach do an about face? They were ready to go to war, and now they don't want to. Riddle me that, Zachary Xavier Portnoy Bryson.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's probably
it's a great question, Zach. That's why I asked it, Mr. Zachary Xavier Portnoy Bryson.
Zachary XP Bryson. Doing the about face is probably indicative of it was probably one, a stunt to kind of bring it. One, two, they wanted the temporary restraining order. And three, I think that the Big Ten really didn't want this to continue going forward and expose other potential issues. And so they were like, look, I think it was kind of the Big Ten coming to the table and saying, please, let's not do this. You know, we'll drop our investigation. Just accept this suspension.
Okay. Well, we found something we disagree on, because I have said, I have some with knowledge of the situation. I'm not mentioning any names, and it's not the name that maybe some of you think it is. I'm aware that there is something bigger that is going on. I don't think we spoke about this on the podcast. I know I've spoke about it on other shows and just in my little circles. There were unconfirmed reports that there was something going around about Michigan that involved a gambling investigation. And I believe reference was made to an entity called U.S. Integrity, which is this gambling compliance entity, through some weird sports law connections. I know the guys at U.S. Integrity well. So they're referenced at Big Ten's letter that I think Michigan was put at U.S. Integrity was put on notice as to what was going on at Michigan with respect to sign stealing. U.S. Integrity is like, that's the entity that caught like the Alabama situation, the Alabama baseball situation. That's the one that caught the James Krause UFC betting. You know, when there was like inside information with respect to this betting situation that happened. People know what I'm talking about. My students know what we're talking about, at least. Now, when we get here, I'm like, okay, there might be something about betting, right? We have something very odd that happened in this lead up since we recorded this last podcast. You know who's fired, Zach? The linebackers coach. Okay. He was fired. Let's see if I can pull this quote up here very quickly. Fired for, quote, attempting to destroy computer evidence. That's it's a quote, a source from Yahoo Sports, Dan Wetzel. And I think Ross Dellinger had that as well. And then there is a separate news story that says that Uncle T, who some, I'm not saying everybody, who some believe is an individual. I'm not going to name his name. I don't want to get the guy in trouble. But his name is Uncle T, who is an individual associated with Michigan's collective that seemingly was funding the sign stealing scheme. So you have the collective that's potentially involved. You have the linebackers coach. And I believe the DB, the DB's coach, defensive backs coach, like turned off his social media. So it's like there's a swarm of things going on now. So I've always said, and maybe I don't say it on this, but I say it in my class, I say it in whatever other media appearances I do, that this is the battle. This is not the war. Like, I don't know. Big Ten's not really trying to punish Michigan. The Big Ten has to kind of defend Michigan, because if Michigan does well, the Big Ten makes money and whatever else, right? The NCAA is the issue. The NCAA is the one that it might be inclined to take away scholarships to institute some type of USC level Pete Carroll era punishment. So I think the Big Ten and Michigan got their heads together and they said, hey, this thing's a little bit bigger than just like John Harbaugh. Please, like, we got to work together here. We got to work together against the NCAA. Let's be on the same page here. Let's not go to battle with each other. Let's join forces in the war that might happen with the NCAA. So that's my sense of it. And I don't know. Some people hate Michigan. Some people are like Schadenfreude with Harbaugh. Like, we hate him. Like, good, this happened to him. He's the worst. You know, whatever else. Like, I respect Michigan. I have a lot of friends that went to Michigan. I respect the hell out of the program. They're a blue blood. I think college football is better with those programs. Programs playing well. I am concerned for Michigan. I think this is the very tip of the iceberg, and I think there is more to come here. More to come out in terms of allegations, and that more that is coming from by way of punishment, much more than a Jim Harbaugh, like, one game, one day a week suspension. I think there's a lot coming here, and I'm concerned, and I would be very concerned if I'm a Michigan fan.
Definitely an interesting take. I think there's, in light of everything that you just talked about, it seems, I think, probable that there's more going on. There's definitely some agreement that the Big Ten and Michigan came to, and if that's the reason, then that's not a good sign. Especially, I know you mentioned it earlier, but the deletion of evidence again, getting back to spoliation. There's lots of questionable and problematic things going on with firings and everything else, and so. It's gonna be tough. I think there's, I hate to say it, Dan, but I think I have to agree with you. There's seems to be more going on here than just this, and they're trying to be a united front against other things that may or may not come out.
See, it's hard to disagree with me because I'm always right. I'm just like, I don't miss. I'm just right all the time. So how can you? No, I'm just kidding. You can disagree with me, Zach. You don't have to agree with me. But I feel very strongly in my convictions. I'd like to find the person that's like, yeah, Michigan didn't do anything. We feel pretty good at this point. I was one of the staunchest defenders possible for Michigan when this first came out. And I said, innocent until proven guilty. Let's not assume that they've done this. But now I'm reading the room or reading the temperature. And I'm like, this is odd. I still feel that if they went to the temporary restraining order hearing, they would have won it. I do feel very strongly about that. So the fact that they did a complete about face and the things that happened in the middle, these linebackers coach was allegedly destroying computer evidence. I'm like, that's a problem. I don't know how we can talk about that. And there have been punishments in sports history. Tom Brady is probably the most famous one of like, he deleted his, or he destroyed his cell phone. He did like a bleach bit situation. Destroyed his cell phone during the Deflategate saga. And, you know, Michigan is firing the linebackers coach in the middle of all this. So it's not just Harbaugh. It's not just Connor Stallions. Like, it's not just Blake Corm, the running back, who's doing, you know, LLCs with Connor Stallions. Like, it's the linebackers coach, the DBs coach. I can't – everything I've just said is public. I know a little bit – probably know a little bit more than that. There's other stuff. I'm going to put it lightly. Other things – I don't want to say other stuff. Other aspects of the investigation that are not those things that are looking everywhere. So now Michigan has done enough that they're on the radars, and now they're you know, even people like me that were out there saying like innocent until proven guilty, blah 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 blah. Now I'm like, I can't say anything. This is not looking good for Michigan. I want to add this before we get to our last topic, which is the Knicks versus Raptors saga, and I'm going to give you the mic for that part, Zach. There was a story which we brought up on our show. Matt Timpanic, our resident DA over here at Connor Detrimental, pointed this out. And we've been talking offline. This was a story from January. The former co-offensive coordinator, so not the linebackers coach, not the defensive backs coach, not the alleged sign stealer, Connor Stallions, the co-offensive coordinator was fired earlier in 2023. Michigan, they have no shortage of controversies. Fired in January of 2023 for, quote, get ready for this, computer access crimes. So we've all been sitting here like for the last, I don't know, almost a year at this point. What does computer access crimes mean? Like, what does that mean? Could it be something really gross? Like, I'm not going to say it, but like, you know, you have a lewd images. People can use their imaginations to what I'm talking about. Like, or what is it? So now we have the sign stealing stuff that pops up. Computer access crimes. What could that be? Could Matt Weiss, could he be separately involved in computer access crimes? And the unconfirmed reports on social media that the gambling revolves around potentially, I don't want to say allegedly, this potentially involves around these computer access crimes in Matt Weiss. So let's pop in our sports law travel time travel machine. We're going to go back a couple years to January 8th of 2016. Zach, we don't rehearse this stuff. Do you have any concept of what I'm about to talk about? I'll give you a hint if you have no idea. I'll give you a hint.
Go ahead and give me that hint.
Major League Baseball. Do you need another hint?
Talking about the Astros?
We're getting really close, but that's not the exact one. We're talking about the NL Central. We're talking about the St. Louis Cardinals. Very interesting. It was a controversy. A guy by the name of Chris Correa, not Carlos Correa, the Astros, Astros shortstop, former Astros shortstop. Chris Correa, 36 of St. Louis, Missouri, pled guilty on January 8th, 2016, to quote, five counts of unauthorized access of a protected computer. Interesting. That sounds a lot like computer access crimes, if you ask me. Chris Correa was an executive with the St. Louis Cardinals who was charged with unauthorized access of a protected computer, aka in that particular case, hacking into and getting access to the Houston Astros database for with respect to, you know, like their scouting, their trades, their player reports. He was arrested and pled guilty to this. So that was stealing access from other people's computers, other teams to get a competitive advantage. We're talking about sign stealing. We're talking about what you could be doing to get a competitive advantage. Sign stealing is certainly there. You guys, I'm well on the record of saying, I don't really think sign stealing is like this level of sign stealing is like the biggest thing. I think it's cheating, but I don't think it's, you know, but I do think that we might have on this podcast, I'll be the first. We'll put our flag up. We'll say this here. We'll timestamp this 11/21/2023. I think Matt Weiss, this is my own opinion. I don't know anything. This is my own opinion that Matt Weiss was also involved in a scheme to get a competitive advantage. It's my theory, competitive advantage from other competitors that involves potentially computer access crimes. Sounds a lot like, quote unquote, unauthorized access of a protected computer, which is what Chris Correa was charged with once upon a time. Zach, let's go 4 for 4. You agree with me on this one, too? What else is computer access crime, Zach? What else is it?
Yeah, that sounds like a computer access crime. Although
it does.
Of a protected computer, this might just be something that I've thought about or looked at in one of my classes. I mean, I'm in internet law right now, but a protected computer might have a different statutory definition. But it sounds, even if it's not the same thing, it's two different, you know, it's two different types of car, two different versions of a Mercedes. It's two very similar things. They kind of go hand in hand for sure.
I think it's 4 for 4. I think I've just hit my lust sports law parlay between these four topics. Now, okay, let's pause here. We got one more topic. Zach, you ready to do this home stretch last topic? And then we'll get some bets and we'll get out of here. We'll GTFO for our Thanksgiving break.
Sounds like a plan.
Speaking of computer access crimes, we have an update in probably the biggest sports law controversy to come out of the NBA in some time. Knicks versus Raptors. They're in court. They have a trade secret lawsuit. We've discussed this on a previous podcast. The long and short, we're not going to do the whole thing, but it's a case that's now pending in my home state of New York, the United States District Court, Southern District of New York. I'm going to give a shout out to two of my students. Let's see if they listen. And if you do, if you're a student in my New York Law School class and you hear what I'm about to say, you can email me, and it's good to know that you're listening to the podcast, which I unintentionally, I don't want to say, I make it optional for you guys to listen to, but this stuff comes up. This type of analysis comes up on the exam. Two of my students, Joe Gravina and Steven Nowitzki, presented last night. We had our last like official class, and I had everybody present on topics and interesting cases that we didn't cover in class that you guys are interested in it. And I want you to present in it, do a little bit of an independent study, whatever you need to do, come up with some fancy PowerPoint. I want you to present in it. So Joe and Steven did a fantastic job last night. So as part of my research for the podcast, I use their lovely slides for this. So I want to make sure I give them a shout out. Shout out to New York Law School, the, I don't want to say the top because you're also a sports law student, officially a top 11 sports law program in the country, little old New York Law School. I'd like to say I had some part in that, but shout out to New York Law School. Shout out to Joe and Steven. Okay. This is a guy. You ready for this, Zach? Or do you want to do this breakdown or do you got it?
You go ahead and do the breakdown and I'll jump in with some stuff.
I'm going to let you do the analysis. I'm going to decide if I agree with you or not. So get ready. I'm going to do the facts. You're going to do the analysis here. You ready for this?
I guess so.
Get ready for this, Zach. You're going to get called on. I'm about to Socratic method.
Oh no,
you.
not the dreaded cold call.
It's not a cold call. I'm telling you, this is Socratic method. Get ready for this. Get that seat warm. It's not a cold call. Warm up that seat. The Knicks are involved in a lawsuit with Maple Leafs Sports and Entertainment DBA, the Toronto Raptors. So the entity that owns the Maple Leafs owns the Raptors. It's not that complicated. Looks like they own the Toronto Argonauts and the Toronto MLS team. So there's a guy. Okay, I think his first name is pronounced EK. EK Azatam. EK is a three-time All-Conference Division I basketball player, Quinnipiac from 2010, 2014. He's like, I'm pretty good at basketball, but like, you know, I didn't make it to the NBA, but I did play overseas and pretty good. So what does this guy do after his playing career ends up? He plays in Spain. He goes and gets a master's in advertising. Okay. He's the graduate assistant for the men's basketball team of the University of Texas. Very interesting. This guy gets into a career in basketball. He works for the Pistons and player development. And then where our story begins, Zach, EK Azatam is hired by the Knicks, and he works for the Knicks from October 5th of 2020 until August 14th of 2023. So his title, I guess, by the end of his employment, he's promoted to Director of Video Analytics Player Development Assistant. Okay. So he's responsible for planning, organizing, and distributing all video responsibilities for the Knicks. Guy sounds like a great hire. He's an All-American, he's an All-Conference Division I player, Quinnipiac, plays overseas. He gets his master's in advertising. He's working for the Pistons, the Knicks. He's good. This guy's a pretty good hire, right? You know who else thinks he's a good hire, Zach? Who thinks he's a good hire?
The Raptors.
The Raptors think he's a good hire. So I told you that last date of employment is allegedly August 14th of 2013. This is, again, sorry, of 2023. So he stops working for the Knicks in August of 2023. Just remember that. So according to the research by my fine law students, Joe and Steven, the Raptors begin to recruit EK. This is according to the complaint. They begin to recruit him from the Knicks in June of 2023. Interesting. Azatam notified the Knicks that he received an offer to join the Raptors staff in July of 2023. Now, here's where the sneaky part happens. Allegedly, according to the Knicks, in a lawsuit that's filed in federal court, it's not filed at arbitration, which we've talked about in a prior episode, we'll talk about in a minute. Azatam, during this period of time, between the courting process and between his last day of work, between June of 23 and August 14th of 2023, does a big no-no. Starts secretly forwarding proprietary information from his Knicks email to his personal Gmail. Nah, not smart. Is it a trade secret that's being stolen? That's up for debate. But you're certainly taking company property and you're giving it to a competitor. I mean, like, that's every employment agreement you're going to sign is going to protect that. So as of August 15th of 2023, this is crazy. So he finishes working for the Knicks on August 14th. One day later, this is from, again, Joe and Steven's fine presentation. The Knicks insider threat security team identified the theft. Knicks records show that the stolen files were accessed over 2,000 times by the Raptors defendants. So very quickly, it's not just that the Raptors got this information. It's that they accessed it rapidly. And where did they get it from? They traced it to this guy Azatam's, personal email in this particular link or his access account. So let's assume for these purposes. You know what? I told you, Zach, I'm going to let you do the analysis. Okay, the Knicks filed a lawsuit on August 22nd, 2023. So this guy leaves the organization. He says his goodbyes, like, we're going to miss you. You're going to be in Toronto. It's probably going to be cold up there, blah, 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 blah. From August 14th, 2023, last day of work, August 22nd, 8 days later, the Knicks file the present lawsuit. Zach, my voice hurts. I'm talking too much. People are tired of my voice. Let me hear the analysis here. What do you think? You think this is a real lawsuit or you think this is a BS lawsuit like your friend Zachary Portnoy Bryson?
I think it's a real lawsuit here. I mean, one, you've got arguably trade secret misappropriation. Or unauthorized access of a computer, and you've got something. So it's definitely a lawsuit that has some oomph behind it. It's definitely got some claims that can be backed up by the evidence, as you just kind of laid out. But one of the things that I think is going to be, or one of the quotes that that I saw in an article talks about, that there may be some sort of hacking or unauthorized access where law enforcement gets involved, which, if that's the case, that makes sense why they're bringing it in federal court instead of having it arbitrated by the NBA, which the Constitution of the NBA says that the commissioner has exclusive and final say on matters involving two or more teams. So I think the reason they brought it in federal district court instead of just going through the arbitration process is they think there might be actual criminal wrongdoing, which is going to be that's a pretty big accusation. It may or may not come to fruition, but I think that's a big part of why they're bringing it in federal court instead of just having it arbitrated, because they want criminal liability here.
Well, I agree with like most of that. I'm not, well, I think the at least, and we'll talk about the James Dolan stuff of it. There's another element of Dolan recently. Don't worry, to my friends at MSG, I'm not saying anything bad about the Knicks, but you know, just got to be careful here. So I guess let's do it here. The Knicks respond to this this lawsuit. They say they want $10 million in damages against the Raptors. Meanwhile, this is the news today. James Dolan, who's the owner of the Knicks, he resigned, quote, resigned from his spots on several NBA Board of Governors committees. Interesting. So, okay, he was resigning. Okay. Now, this is a July, so Woj reports this, Woj from ESPN writes, quote, "Given all that has occurred lately, I have come to the conclusion that the NBA neither needs nor wants my opinion. My hope is that the Knicks will be treated equally and fairly as all other NBA teams. I am very busy with all of my duties at the MSG family of companies. I need to apply my time where I can be most productive." So, interesting. Interesting. I think Dolan also owns the Sphere, so he's got a lot of work to do on the Sphere. As cool as that thing is in Vegas, I think there are some reports that it's like hemorrhaging money. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. It's kind of like a nuisance. Like, I've seen like videos of like a giant eyeball looking at you. Like, what if I have a house that I just don't want to have a giant eyeball looking at my window? Well, I digress. I think the Sphere is really cool, but like, and I don't really like that Dolan owns it, but side story. Not saying anything bad. Just, it's cool. I don't know if Dolan's the coolest, but side story. Okay. So Dolan steps down. Part of this, part of the Knicks response is that that Silver has a relationship with the Raptors owner. So there's going to be some favoritism here. And a judge in the SDNY, in the Southern District of New York, isn't going to have that level of favoritism. So let's duke it out here where this is a fair forum. You know, I'm not sure I agree with that. And I am a Knicks fan. The Raptors, in their response, wrote, they cite Article Bylaw D of Article 24 of the NBA's Constitution. That bylaw states that, quote, "The commissioner shall have exclusive, full, complete, and final jurisdiction of any dispute involving two or more members of the association." Assuming we're going to hold to that rule, Zach, exclusive means exclusive. Full means full. Complete means complete. Final means final. I'm not sure how the Knicks get around that. You know, I probably agree with them that like Silver's probably has some level of bias, but this bylaw doesn't state that. This bylaw of the NBA's constitution, which all the teams have agreed to, are very clearly saying whatever two teams have a dispute, and obviously Silver's going to have a relationship with every team. So I'm not sure this stays in court. What do you think?
I think it's probably going to end up. I honestly, Dan,
gotta
I
give
don't
me
know.
Need an answer, Zach. Need an answer.
I can't say I fully agree because there's so many other things that are going on. It's a dispute about there was another the Knicks wrote whoever at the Knicks, quote, "There is no nexus between the claims and the NBA Constitution. It's a dispute about theft of trade secrets by a disloyal employee, a scenario not contemplated by the NBA Constitution. Trade secret misappropriation, breaches of contract, and tort claims are the type of issues routinely that appear before federal judges," end quote. I think that's a really good point. It's a strong point, but if the NBA Constitution says that they have exclusive and final, then I agree that it's hard to get it out of that required arbitration. But I think the other part that might keep it out is if there is criminal charges, because if there's criminal charges, well, how can, you know, the commissioner of the NBA can't arbitrate a criminal charge. It has to be brought in court. So
I don't know if we're at criminal yet. You keep saying that it might not be criminal. It might just be like trade secrets, which isn't necessarily a criminal case.
No, it very well might not be criminal, but I think the reason they brought it there and they're fighting so hard is because they are exploring that avenue as an option. Now, if that option fails, then I think it's a lot weaker of a case to keep it in federal court. And instead of arbitration, I think it's a lot easier to see it go there. But I think right now there's more than a slim chance that it stays in federal court if there are all of these other things going on. And I mean, you know, this sort of thing, it's a dispute between two teams, but it's also a dispute between a team and a former employee. So it's really one team and employee. So, or there's at least that aspect to it. So there's lots of different ways to frame it and think about it. And while I think that you are, you know, you might be right, I think there's at least more of an argument here that there's a possibility that it could stay in federal court.
You read this, but I just want to emphasize this. This is from the Knicks. "We are unaware of the NBA commissioner ever having handled something similar. As a matter of contract formation, the arbitration provision cannot be applied to plaintiff's claims." So they're right and they're wrong. It's like, just because it hasn't been handled before something similar doesn't mean like by default we go to the courts now. If you're reading that fairly, it says that any dispute between the two teams will be handled by the commissioner. So it doesn't matter if it's a case of first impression. If I'm the Raptors, I'm like, it's got to kind of go to silver. And then, you know, if you want to appeal it and do anything else. But then to your point, you know, like we're talking about computer access crimes, right? I'm not quite sure this rises to a criminal level. It's like someone emailing them stuff to their Gmail account. I mean, and obviously getting advantage of it. It might satisfy some type of criminal element. I don't foresee this resulting in criminal charges. Maybe it does. I'm happy to be wrong. But it sounds somewhat similar to what Michigan was investigated for, unauthorized access to a computer, and the same thing that Chris Carrera from the Cardinals was. Those are those accessing without knowledge a third party's information. And if anybody did the research in the Chris Carrera Astros Cardinals hacking scandal, it was like he guessed the password. It was like something so like juvenile, like, and this isn't really that different. So maybe you're not wrong, Zach. Maybe there's some deeper understanding here. And you and I talked about this offline. I think the Knicks are also trying to shame the Raptors and make them look really stupid. And they want to bring this to everyone's attention. If a case is handled in arbitration privately, and let's say the case does end up ultimately getting kicked to arbitration, we all know about this. This is now front page of the Sports Law Gazette, which if you stay at the Conduct at Detrimental Resorts World and Casino, they drop this at your door every day, the Sports Law Gazette. It's on the front page. So we all know about it. Now, if this case gets kicked to arbitration, great. But we know that this case exists. And this guy, you know, Azatam, is going to have a hard time, you know, future job, you know, like job loyalty. The Raptors might not trust him with stuff. So, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting that the stuff gets out. I think we can end it here. I think I feel pretty good with our analysis there. Zach, you good?
Yeah, I mean, we covered a lot on this issue particularly, but all of the issues we agreed 4 out of 5 times. And then, oh, you know, 4.5. I'll give you 4.5. But I think we did a lot, went into a lot. I'm happy to leave it there.
Okay, so last time we did this, Zach, you stumbled and fumbled and bumbled, and you didn't want to make a sports pick. I like had to push you to bet for your Wake Forest. Are they the Demon Deacons, Wake Forest?
Demon Deacons.
What is a Demon Deacon?
That is a phenomenal, phenomenal question.
You got to know this. You got to know this.
A Demon Deacon, it's called that because Wake Forest was originally a Baptist-affiliated university. And after a football game, they were called the Deacons because that's, you know, a colloquial term for someone who serves on some board at a Baptist church. And then after a football game, a columnist called them those Demon Deacons who were out there and ran over whatever the other team was. And it stuck. That and so like now we're...
Yeah, but it sounds like an oxymoron. You're a demon and you're a deacon. That sounds kind of bad.
It is a little bit of an oxymoron. One little fun fact for you, Dan. So, you know, NC State and their mascots, the Wolfpack. Yeah, they have a Mr. and Mrs. Wolf as two different mascots for them. It's a couple, and they've done two different ceremonies where Mr. and Mrs. Wolf have one been married. And then two, quote unquote, reaffirmed their vows, and the officiant to their quote unquote wedding was the Demon Deacon in both instances.
That is a fun fact. I thought it would be more fun though.
I mean, you have to go look at the pictures. It's kind of cute. They did do a whole ceremony at a basketball game. It's just a little fact that may or may not be fun.
So I'm going to give the bet of the week. I am like scorching hot in all things betting. Before we do that, I always like to close the show with the bet. We haven't done this in a while. What to watch for? I was on a flight back from Orlando, and I'm like going through JetBlue, trying to find the right, you know, something to watch. You know, I don't really just looking. I try to look for documentaries. I'm like a big documentary guy, sports documentaries. I can find them. I go to the documentary, Zach, and what do I find? I find something I've never heard of, and I'm usually pretty good at tracking down all sports documentaries, big, small, Netflix, ESPN, Peacock. I watch all of them. I've never heard of this one. It was very good. It was called The Grizzly Truth. And now if you're wondering what this was about, it's the story of the Vancouver Grizzlies getting uprooted. It's being an expansion franchise. I got a lot of good takes on this. If anybody ends up watching this, being an expansion franchise in Vancouver and being ripped out of the ground in Vancouver and shipped off to Memphis. A lot of legal concepts. Read some really interesting stuff about expansion drafts. Lawyers involved, millions of dollars, tens of millions. I think it's a really interesting story, one that I've really never heard told before. So, you know us, Zach. We were following the St. Louis Rams relocation stuff really closely. And you know, with that background in mind, if you been around our podcast for the last 3 years, that was a story we followed very closely, the St. Louis Rams saga. It's Grizzly Truth is pretty good. I don't really know where it was released, but I'm sure you can find it on YouTube or I don't know, some one of these sites. So that is my what to watch for. Okay, and that brings us to our Better Edge Best Bet of the week. I think this is the only podcast we're doing this week, so I'm going to take it. I've went to the well a couple times on Michigan. Michigan this week has the game of the weekend. It's going to be the highest rated game of the entire college football season. It has ramifications on a number of levels. If Michigan wins this, they are marching straight to the college football playoff. If they don't win it, they have outs, but it'll be much less fun. Ohio State number 2 against Michigan number 3. These two have been charted on a course of destiny to face each other the whole year. They're undefeated. Some would say the white knight that is Ohio State. Can they take down Michigan? Those evil, dastardly villains, the demon deacons of the Big Ten. Michigan, right? These like dastardly guys. Ohio State 2, Michigan 3. Michigan is a 3-point favorite at home. Michigan has won this game each of the last 2 years after being on the wrong side for the vast majority of years from Ohio State beforehand. Zach, call me crazy. I'm going to the well.
I don't know if I can call you crazy, but we'll see. Hope, I'm not going to slander you. There's going to be no slander about your picks. So
I'm going Michigan, Zach. I appreciate the support. Michigan minus 3 is my Better Edge Best Bet of the week. I'm nervous about it. I'll admit this. I've bet on Ohio State each of the last 2 years. And I've lost money on Michigan every time, or betting on Ohio State on this game. I think Michigan makes it 3 in a row, and I think we have a Houston Astros, New England Patriots, ultimate wrestling heel villain situation on our hand as Michigan is primed and ready to take that march to the national championship. I'm all for it. I'm all for the ratings. That's my best bet. Zach, you dare to give one this week, or you're going to just side with me? We're going to ride together on this one.
Dan, I'm definitely going to ride with you there. It'd be really cool if this was also their 1,000th win, but their 1,001 win is also going to be good. I'm right there with you.
1,001 wins for Michigan. Like, they're a blue blood. The baseball is better when the Yankees are good. Basketball is better when the Lakers are good. Like, that. I don't know. It's just how Dallas Cowboys in football. Like, Michigan is one of those teams, and I think the ratings would be through the roof if Michigan made this march. People love to hate them. So I think it's good for sports law. So that's the bet. Michigan minus 3 at home in Ann Arbor against those pesky Buckeyes. Okay, that'll do it for us here at Conic Detrimental. Wishing everybody a very happy Thanksgiving. And we'll be back next week with another installment of your favorite sports law podcast, the Sports Law Podcast, Conduct Detrimental.